I took a round from the sub on a port side deck. Three were killed.
But you all see where they?
Yes, sir. Dickie and I fought him out on the surface, and we got him. My escort group sank three others.
Four U-boats? Bloody good job, Greyhound.
Aye, aye, sir.
Tell me, Greyhound, just curious, how many crossings does that make for you now?
This was my first, sir.
Unbelievable. Well, let's hope next time's a bit easier, eh? Then we'll show, come on.
Thank you, sir.
All right, hey guys, and welcome to the Three Drinks In podcast, episode number 181. I'm your host, Vince. Back again is your host, Phil. There he is.
Hey.
There he is, barely awake. In this episode, we are talking about the new Tom Hanks movie, Greyhound, available on Apple TV, Apple Plus TV Plus, something, Apple, from Apple.
Apple something.
Right. Before we get into that, though, I want to remind you that Three Drinks In is available on all streaming services, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. Make sure that you subscribe, tell your friends, leave a review. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Three Drinks In Pod. That's at the number three, Drinks In Pod. You can like us on Facebook, and you can email us at threedrinksinpodcast@gmail.com. Right. Was that a beer you had there?
Yeah, I'm drinking a beer.
Hey, how about that?
Mm-hmm.
I have discovered rye whiskey. I don't have anything a rye whiskey.
Moving up. You leveled up there, huh?
It's lighter than bourbon. It's easier to drink, basically. So,
yeah, I'm not drinking anything heavy over here. It's
we serve hard drink for men who want to get drunk fast.
What is that from?
It's from It's a Wonderful Life. It's the best line in the movie when he wakes up from his like stupor, and he's it's after they take him out of history, and they go to Nick's bar, and Nick, who was the nice guy like a half an hour ago, is now this surly barkeep. We don't need anybody given the joint atmosphere.
Yeah,
he has this ridiculous like Brooklyn accent, and it takes place in like upstate New York. It's hilarious.
God. Yeah, I mean, I'm only drinking. It's like 4.9%.
Yeah. Fatherhood changes your ability to drink higher alcohol content beers, which is frustrating.
So, thank you to Greg for filling in for me.
Yeah, Greg did a really nice job.
Yeah,
You guys should definitely go check out their podcast, the DDT Archives podcast. They do they began doing a lot of just reviews of old matches and old big events for like nostalgia purposes. But they've been very lucky in getting a lot of guys to come on the show from different wrestling circuits around the country, and so it's been really really interesting hearing them do it. Do interviews with guys, which is something we've yet to do.
Yeah.
That's okay.
That's but okay.
Anyway, thanks again for Greg for filling in.
You don't change horses midstream, so.
No. So.
But I'm back, which makes it easy because there really isn't much to see because there's still no movies.
No, we're still shut down. Mm-hmm. We got Mulan coming out on the Disney Plus. You know, the extra maybe $30 and you can watch Mulan.
Yeah, Mulan's coming out. Bill and Ted 3, and
that's a thing.
That's about it.
Yeah, and now of course, like I just watched the trailer for Batman, which we might get to later on, and it says like currently in production, which is I thought funny.
They said they only made a quarter of it, right? Like 25%.
Is that, I didn't hear how much, but that's a very small percentage.
Sure, yeah.
But then it's like only in theaters. Like, oh, you're cute. That's adorable. Only in theaters.
Maybe by the time they finish it, it'll be.
I was gonna say, yeah.
Whoever's left populating the planet will be able to see.
We'll have cured the common cold by then, and you can do whatever you want.
Well, then you can stick around because next year they're doing the 4-hour Justice League Snyder cut.
The trailer for that dropped today too, I believe.
Yeah. It doesn't look good. It looks like you would think a Zack Snyder Superman film would look.
Can you think of a single director's cut where people were like, no, this is much better?
No.
I mean,
I really can't.
Arguments are made for Blade Runner, but I've never been able to finish Blade Runner.
No. See, that's
false. Because it's bad. It's a bad movie.
I've seen the director's cut of that, and it's just longer.
Well, they took out the narration. That was the big thing with that, was that the studio wanted him to narrate the story because they felt it was confusing, because it is confusing. And they took that part out, and they put more of Edward James Olmos leaving commentative origami places, yeah. Which... It's just a phrase you never think you'd say out loud, but there it is.
There's
like more than one cut of that. There's like the director cut, the final cut, the final cut again.
But the problem with that movie is that it was not good. Like when they put it out, it wasn't made well. There's bits and pieces missing. So they kept trying to like tinker with it, but every time they do, it still doesn't fix it. You know, if you got a car with only two wheels, you can't just stick some new windshield wipers on it and say the car works now. It's missing wheels, for God's sakes. So
the main problem hasn't been addressed yet, everybody.
Right. You know. Like I once saw the director's cut of Apocalypse Now, and it was like way longer than it had to be, and I was like,
and that's already not a short movie.
No. You know what the worst one was, when I saw the director's cut of That Thing You Do?
Yeah, speaking of Tom Hanks.
Yeah, like as a good segue, like that's a comedy, and the director's cut made it into a drama. It was shocking. I was like, wow, this is really different.
Yeah, I forgot about that. And it was one of those things that I came on like one of those paid HBO channels things, and I was looking at it, and I'm like, oh, I'll check this out. I bet it's this not the same thing at all.
Yeah,
it was so different.
Yeah, like you're expecting just like an extra few funny scenes, but it's not. Like all the pace was different, and scenes were rearranged. It was awful.
It's really a testament to what you can do with editing. Like you could really make a whole different movie. Like the core of the film is still the same. It's about a group of guys in a band that are not the Beatles, and they have a one hit wonder, and then they fade into nothingness. But like, that's not a story. That's just that's a single event that happens. The story is what happens to the people around it. And like, I love that movie because the song is so damn catchy. It's not like a great movie. It's just a fun movie. And
yeah,
I think they wanted
fun.
I think he wanted to make a serious film that involved the characters a lot more deeply. And if you watch the film, you realize that there's no character at all in the film. They're kind of all the same from beginning to end. The drummer guy learns a little bit about how the music business works, but everyone's pretty much the same from start to finish. It's just kind of a slice of life about what, you know, this crazy ride these guys went on for a year or so. But I guess that's not what Tom Hanks wanted to do, which is fine. You want to make a movie about people who experience a thing and then change, but you got to make that good. Otherwise, no one's going to want to release it.
Yeah, I would not have wanted to see that in theaters.
Well, here's a question too. He didn't get final cut. Like, yeah, first time director, okay, but it wasn't like a big budget picture. You know, it wasn't like he wanted to do like a Star Wars type thing. It was a little passion project, and he was the biggest male name in Hollywood at that time, and for a long time. So I guess they didn't want to take the risk, and they went, okay, Tom, you can do it, but we're going to cut the shit out of this thing if we don't like it. And they didn't like it.
Yeah, I mean, I have no basis for inside knowledge, but I have a feeling that they don't usually give that to most directors unless they're like well known, like Spielberg or something. I mean, you got to trust it to a team of editors and things, because directors have their own vision that doesn't always match up with what they get, you know, from the acting and the special effects and what have you. So maybe they're like, well, look, we don't want a depressing period piece about the 60s bands. We want something fun and fluffy because that's the kind of person Tom Hanks is, and that's how we can market it. And he's not that character.
Which is funny because that's exactly the story, like that's the crux of the end of the film, is his character as, you know, as the record producer is, you know, tells the band, I want something snappy, I want something poppy. And they, and Jimmy, the band leader, just wants to write this lover's lament crap, he says.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's hilarious to me. But
I mean, and like, he's not, he's like the bad guy in the movie. He's not like good to them, and he's only about business. So it's like, we gotta trade off of that. And people go to see Tom Hanks movies because he's always the good guy.
Right. I mean, he's not so much the bad guy. He's just not the friendly guy that you've come to know from like Big.
He's like, not your bosom buddy.
Like, there is no bad guy in the movie.
Right.
You know, there's just like, you know, reality.
He's the machine.
Right.
You know, like they churn up bands and spit them out when they don't become profitable.
But, you know, they like the more you go back and watch some of these older movies, you kind of think about, you know, there's really not a whole lot to this. It was just parts of it were so engaging and entertaining that you didn't really care. Like, it was just, it was a fun little ride to go on. And that was that. But he didn't direct Greyhound. He did write Greyhound, though.
Yeah, based on a book.
Based on a book that I have heard from movie critics such as John Podhoretz is fantastic.
That's suspect.
Yeah. But it's the book is called The Good Shepherd, so they couldn't call this film The Good Shepherd because there's too many things called The Good Shepherd. Mm. And it's basically completely in his head. The guy, I can't think of the name of the character now that I'm thinking about it, but I'm going to do a little thing here, and we'll find that.
Captain Kraus?
Kraus? Kruse? Yeah, Kraus. The entire novel takes place in this guy's head. So for those of you who didn't read ahead and didn't see the film, I don't know why you'd be, you know, here. But this is the story of a guy who has been a long-term Navy officer, never gotten his own command. It's World War II. They're, sending over supplies in anticipation of D-Day. And I think that's what this was. And this guy gets the command of a battleship called the Greyhound. And he's never really been in command of a ship before, so he's... This is kind of all academic, it seems, to him, for the most part. He's never had the experience. And the book is really just him going, like, how do I do everything from the actual naval warfare to giving orders and taking command? And, like, he doesn't sleep for 5 days. He's awake. He's at the helm, you know, for 5 days. And taking that and translating that into a film... It's a pretty mammoth task if you think about like the source material.
Mm-hmm.
So,
what did you think of Greyhound?
It's a little while ago since I saw it because we kind of sat down to watch it to do a podcast, and then you know your wife went into labor shortly after that. It was just before the tropical storm came through.
Oh, right.
And we all lost power for a week.
It's been a year, man.
It's taken a year.
Was that after my surgery or before that? Like,
I think...
Oh, my God.
I think we might have watched the movie before you had surgery. You had surgery. We were all set to podcast. And then the power got knocked out, and then, you know...
I died of power for like a week.
Yeah, it was a long haul there.
I spent a year there one night.
But so we're kind of digging back in the old memory hole, folks. But I liked this movie, if you can call it that, because like we were just talking about you know, Tom Hanks writing and directing a movie that had no character development, this one barely has any characters at all. Like, there's sort of nothing to this film. I can't say, I mean, it's not an empty or thin or sort of vapid movie, but it's basically what you get one thing, which I think is the Battle of the Atlantic. So I was wrong. It was not 1945. It was 1942. So it was rather early in the war. They were, you know, basically resupplying the British because the British didn't have anything at that point. And so it's just that. You know, it's just the battle of the Atlantic and this guy's ability to command his ship in that experience. And that's it. Like, I can't say it's bad because I was engaged with it. I enjoyed it. I thought it was gripping at times. It was visually pretty spectacular for a fairly low budget movie. I mean, I'm looking over here at IMDb. You know, doesn't give me a budget was $50 million. That's not inconsiderable, but it's not huge. You know, like, they make a lot of big budget war films, but, you know, $200 million we're talking about here. This is, you know, a quarter of that. So I liked it. I just don't know that there was much to it. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, there isn't much to it, which is the point. I mean, I liked it enough. It was certainly gripping at certain parts. You know, like, I didn't know anything about this battle and the subsequent battles that they had during the war. I mean, at the end, they always give you, like, the stats. Like, then they made 10 more runs and 50,000 men were killed and what have you. And, like, I didn't know any of that stuff. So, like, oh, that's kind of interesting. You know, like, 70,000 people died on the ocean because there was this no man's land where the airplanes couldn't provide cover. So the submarines just sank everybody. I was like, holy shit, I never heard of such a thing. People were describing it as, like, the ultimate dad movie. And this is the ultimate dad movie, which is not always, like, a compliment.
No, in fact, it rarely is.
Yeah, like, dads don't care. But that's also because, I guess, dads are supposed to be so, like, slow-witted and simple that they don't mind being called, you know, dad movie dads.
I think more specifically, boomer dad.
Right.
Yeah,
see those commercials where the guy is trying to tell people not to turn it to their parents for, like, insurance. It's like an insurance commercial.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's, like, the guy reading a book, and he goes, "Now, who reads books about submarines?" And the guy goes, "My dad reads books about submarines." Like, like you should be embarrassed to read a book about submarines. You know?
Yeah.
And it was like that. You
know, like, this is the guy that watches Ken Burns documentaries for the fourth time, and, like, not the new ones about Vietnam, but, like, the old ones about the Civil War, like those kind of history buffs and older guys. And
yeah, you've got a situation where men are traditionally masculine. There's clearly good guys and bad guys. You got as much motivation as you need. You know, Tom Hanks wants to get back to his girlfriend so he can marry her. It's over 90 minutes. The good guy wins. And I don't need to know all the names of the other characters because they're really not that important. You know, even the bad guy, I don't need to have a name or a face, just the picture. You know, we all know what the Nazi symbol looks like. So just throw a Nazi symbol on the submarine and I can tell he's the bad guy. And that's the whole movie. It's nothing more complicated than that. It's a dad movie. And in that case, this is the ultimate dad movie. I mean, I was looking at my watch like, that's it? It's over?
Yeah, there's nothing extraneous. It's very lean.
It's like 88 minutes with the credits.
Yeah, it was a tight 90, as they say.
Yeah. But, and I didn't know that going in. So, like, the first 15, 20 minutes when they're doing all the jargon, you know, like, which I assume is accurate, you know, hard to port and degrees starboard and what have you. I was like, this is really heavy. Is this the whole movie? Yeah, this is the whole movie. They're just going to be doing military jargon, which is interesting for a while. But I mean, I know I'm like, I'm a dad now, but I'm not a boomer dad. So after a while, I was like, this is all there is? It was a little disappointing. Because yeah, it was the same scenario over and over again.
And I think any subtle changes in the situation were difficult to follow. Like, if you kind of like think back and if you want to nitpick it, no, it wasn't the exact same situation because they were talking about firing on this ship instead of that ship, and then there was the oil tanker and these people, and you know, there's a lot going on. It's tremendously busy. There's no point in it where you're like, there's nothing happening. And so, you know, moments where the ships almost collide, which is very exciting, and there's like a lot of different things like that, but they're not massively different. It's still the same basic thing. It's a naval battle. It's a right, 5-day naval battle that we talk about in basically 84 minutes.
And each one, you're right, was like a little different. Like, we almost hit each other, or we can't see, so we're firing and we're accidentally hitting each other and stuff like that. And the only thing to mark the passage of time are the title cards, and you're watching Tom Hanks like deteriorate because he won't sleep. To the point where his feet are bleeding.
Yeah.
You know, at the end where, like, he asks for his coat and his mittens, but he won't eat anything, and he hasn't had any tea, and then, like, his shoes hurt.
He drinks coffee constantly.
Right. But he doesn't even, like, get a meal.
Why he won't eat, I don't know. Like, I guess he wouldn't have to go to the bat. Like, he wouldn't have to be in the can for too long. Or
yeah, like he has to, like, sit down to enjoy it, because he has, like, a nice meal, and everybody else gets, like, you know, hard crusty bread. I mean, they make it sound like nobody else gets any food.
Yeah, he gets a T-bone and they get hardtack.
Yeah. You're feeding us gruel. It's imitation gruel, you know.
Yeah, no.
But like, that's the only thing you really get. You're just watching this guy do everything he can to save as many people around him as he can. Okay. And they give him Elizabeth Shue as his girlfriend for like just enough reason. Like, what's the reason to do this besides being a good person? He's got to get back to his girlfriend. Okay.
Yeah.
As basic as they come.
No. And it's not really a complaint per se. Like, I don't know what else you could have done to make this. If you wanted to make a movie about the Battle of the Atlantic, then that's just what they did. You know, like there's lots of different ways we've discovered over the last several years to make war movies. I think for a long time, when you made a war film, you know, especially since World War II, because World War II has a very, it's ripe with narrative possibilities, but they were all kind of standard. I mean, like, I didn't see All Quiet on the Western Front. That's on my list, but that's about World War I. World War I movies are different. Because it was such a different experience. And it's really about, you know, survival in hellish conditions, you know, without purpose. You know, like, I've been rewatching Downton Abbey with my wife for the last few weeks because there's nothing on television. So we're like, you know, if there's no baseball, which there may not be because of, you know, COVID, you know, we just watch these old shows because it's very, like, low stakes. And so you can kind of watch it. It's not, like, very tense. But that show, the end of the first season is the beginning of World War One, and the second season is how, you know, that war spurs a lot of changes in their social situation. And later on, you know, one character gets into an argument with one lower class character gets into an argument with somebody from the upper class about how the war was a complete and total waste, which it was. And they all get mad at her. And I'm like, but no, she's right. Like, you know, they're painting her as being like cruel and insensitive, and she kind of was in the scene. But it's like, but she's dead right, because all these poor kids died, and like there was no reason for it. So those films are different, but World War II films were all kind of the same stock for a long time. And then you began to get different ones, like Saving Private Ryan, and then as wars became more complex, aside from Vietnam, you got different kind of war movies. This is not that. This is very much back, like you said, like it's an old dad film. And in order to make that film again, they just took away all the sentimentality. and made it so bare bones that you're kind of gripped, but you can't make it a minute longer, otherwise you fall asleep.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's because they've stripped out everything besides Tom Hanks's. I mean, there's nobody else famous in this movie at all, and everybody else is supposed to be young because they're new sailors at this, and he's like the guy who finally gets a chance to command one. So only one guy gets any backstory. Like, actually, he doesn't get any backstory. I'm sorry. He only gets a skill. He's good at being like on the radar.
Right.
You know, everybody else is just there. So you stripped it down to one person. Whereas like a movie, Saving Private Ryan, Band of Brothers, it's an ensemble thing. There's more than one guy. And it becomes kind of this thing, like, who's going to make it? You know, what are we, how is everyone going to react to the crazy situations we find? They're stuck on a ship going one direction. So they chose not to focus on anything but Tom Hanks getting across the ocean. All right, well, I guess dads don't like things too complicated.
And that's what I would think the book would do extremely well, is give you all that character, even if you're only in one guy's head, you know, and basically a stream of consciousness the entire time. You can get all that from a narrative. You can't get it in film. And so it's both good and not bad, but like, there's obvious flaws, but that's just because they made the right choices, if that makes any sense. Like, they didn't have anything extraneous. There's nothing wasted. Everything that's relevant is presented. Nothing is there by accident. And it's an extremely tightly written, well executed film. It just depends if you like this kind of movie or not.
Yeah, I think the best thing that they did was that they showed all the action in a way that makes it comprehensible if you're not familiar with like the nautical jargon, because they don't ever slow down and say, like, it's because he's coming up and he's trying to flank us and he's trying to make it look like he's really there.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I was thinking about that as I was watching it, is that they don't dumb down the dialogue for the audience. There's no stupid person.
Yeah.
Who goes, what's happening now, Sarge?
Yeah. Well, what does that mean? Like, the cook doesn't come out and go, well, what's going on? Like, you know.
Actually, the cook gets in on it. He puts on a life jacket at one point. He's like, what do I do?
At one point, you see the cook, like, loading shells into the cannon. You're like, good for the cook. Although, I think he gets blown up later.
No, he survives.
Does he?
No.
He's killed.
No, I think he lives.
No.
Because he's actually one of the few. And there are other more famous actors, but there's no one like Tom Hanks. It's just there's one Tom Hanks. But yeah, but the guy who's like the galley waiter, and and like the chief or lieutenant so and so, and like, you know, in the engine room, they're reasonably famous guys. You know, long-standing working character actors.
Mm-hmm.
Like you know their faces, but not their names, kind of a thing.
Yeah, like, oh, that guy, you know. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they did a really good job of, like, I knew with each situation, like, what the problem was. That, like, oh, this thing sounds like a submarine, but it's not. It's a decoy. Or, oh, they can't see. They're accidentally hitting each other. Even though the characters are not saying that. They're just screaming at each other. They're barking orders. You know, Tom Hanks is trying to slap the young ensign silly, like, get to your post, man. You know, like, that kind of stuff. So they did do a good job with that. But if you don't like military action, I mean, my wife would have hated this movie.
I watched it with my wife, and she was into it, but like, I wouldn't say she was riveted. She was like, oh, this is pretty good. Like, she had a very blasé reaction to it.
Yeah, like after a while, like, I could see my wife saying, like, well, what else you got, you know?
Yeah. There was one moment I thought that was important to have in it, and I'm glad they put it in there. Because you really don't get a lot of chances to breathe in the film. I mean, you don't need too many because it's so short. But that one shot where they, I forget what exactly was happening just before it, but like the camera pans up, way up, like above the clouds. Of course, it's raining. And you see the Aurora Borealis.
Yes, because it was like at night and they had just sunk like a bunch of really important ships. and they were like slaughtering each other at that moment, and they were like trying to show you that, like, above all the chaos was something beautiful, I guess.
Yeah, and you know, and how small it seems from a certain vantage point, like,
yeah,
which is not a shot you get in a lot of war movies, and I can't think of one where it's where you get a detached shot like that.
Yeah, that's
which is almost to say, like, look at these silly creatures trying to kill each other on this planet somewhere. It's this weird, yeah, almost science fiction perspective.
It's like, yeah, it's like a perspective thing. Like, they're trying to take you out of it for a moment, because when the movie starts, you're in it. You're in the, you know, yeah, you're in the cramped little ship, and every little thing that bothers the ship, they show you. The electric circuits freeze because it's so cold, you know. The shells, you can't see with all the fog, so you don't know what you're hitting. And then that's one of those few times where it's like, look at how silly this all is. And look, you know, they give you a minute to think about it, which is different. You don't usually see that in a dad movie. You know, it's down and dirty until the end.
Yeah, it was nice. It was, but again, it wasn't distracting. Like, nothing distracts in this movie. It's very
There's
purposeful.
No time. No time, yeah, to distract, but, you.
Yeah, there's less time to. I mean, you could still fuck it up if you really wanted to do it badly. You could throw weird, like, flashbacks in there or all kinds of jargon, you know, to distract him. But he doesn't. He's incredibly, you know, monomaniacal and focused about what's going on.
Would you have seen this if it was in the theaters?
I think so. I think this film suffers for not being in the theaters. You know, like, some of the films that have come out that I've seen in the last few months, like, it's kind of been like, yeah, all right, I can see, you know, like, but this is like a non-big, you know, it's not like a blockbuster like Tenet is going to be, or James Bond. Although I think, you know, James Bond is actually not a film I need to see in theaters. It'll be nice to see it in theaters if I do, but if I don't, I'll be happy to watch that on my television at home. Like, it's nothing, you know, but this, the scale of this, you know, like, I regret deeply not having gone to see Dunkirk in theaters. Something about the way it was described really turned me off. Someone said, oh, it's like Saving Private Ryan, but as if the entire film was just the first 30 minutes.
God, who would want to watch that?
Exactly. And I was like, well, that sounds just awful. I mean, the first 30 minutes of that film are very difficult. It's the reason I don't watch that movie ever. It's, you know, movie's not fun.
It's never on TV, I think, for that reason.
Yeah. It's,
you know?
It takes 17 hours to watch it. It's excellent. It's an important film. I think it's really very good. But I'm not watching. I'm not sitting through that. It's just, it's too much. So when someone said that that's what Dunkirk was like, I was like, well, I can just cross that one off. And I should have known better. It's Christopher Nolan. It's, you know, it's not a typical kind of war film. He's a very clever director. And I watched it at home. I was like, oh, that wasn't bad. That wasn't, you know, it was difficult. And there were parts of it that were very tense. But that was a very poor description of the movie. Like, this is actually more like, you know, the first half an hour of Saving Private Ryan in a certain sense. It's just less sort of gory. You know, it was a different kind of action than like, you know, beachfront battle.
Well, I appreciate that too, because some of the guys got hurt and died on his ship too. And it was like, we're not going to dwell on this, which is good because that's not what people would have done. Like, when they got hurt, a lot of the guys kind of like looked away and made like their faces went green, which was a nice touch, because like, you just watch a guy get his like jaw blown off and you're like, I can't look at this. Yeah. So why are you making the camera look at it, you know? And that's just an editing choice. Like, what do I want to show? Well, don't show that. Please.
But I think this and, you know, and films like Dunkirk too, they benefit not so much also, like, there's two things to consider. One is the subject matter. And the second thing is the way it's shot. Films like Dunkirk are shot 70 millimeters. So, you know, you can put it in IMAX and it just looks fantastic. This is, I don't think this was shot that way. But just the kind of film this is. It's a big movie. It involves big objects moving through space. It's fun to do that in a, you know, the same thing is true of like Ford versus Ferrari. You know, cars moving through space very quickly, and like that's fun to see on a big screen because there's a lot of things happening quickly that you, if you take it all in, it's more immersive on a, you know, in a larger format. So yeah, I think this was, it was too bad that this didn't make it. Although I don't know when Apple TV bought it, because they must have bought it a while ago. It wasn't like they bought it just for the pandemic and no one's going to the movies.
Yeah, no, I don't know.
But this was their big tentpole to get everyone to sign up for Apple TV Plus, which I got for free because I bought an iPhone.
Wow.
You know, within the last year, so I get like a year of it for free.
I do see commercials for that service with stuff, but I don't really know, like, if I'd watch any of it.
I don't know what's on it. I mean, Apple TV Plus is funny because it's both, you know, Apple's sort of, they primarily make hardware, but they also now, like, Rails are trying to get into the content business. And I think that's a mistake. I think you should stick to what you're good at. But, you know, so right now they got, Apple TV is a thing you can buy. Apple TV Plus is a service that you can pay for to get access to things. But like, so it's hard to know where one begins and the other ends. And like all Apple products, and I like Apple products, but like all of them, like the device itself just makes no sense to buy, because I could just, I could spend $200 on that thing or $30 on something from Amazon or Roku, and then Bob's your uncle, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, but yes, this is a shame that we couldn't see this one in theaters, I think. It would have enhanced the experience somewhat.
Sure. You know, those kinds of movies usually do. It was good. I mean, it's a short film, so it would always be a short podcast. Like, there's just nothing else to say about it because there's so little there to talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's see good. It, everybody, if you can.
Yeah, you should go. You should, you know. Then while you're there, you can watch the new Snoopy cartoon they have that I haven't seen yet. It's the other bit of content that they have there is the new Snoopy cartoon.
New Snoopy?
Yeah. Supposed to be good. I haven't seen it. So, in other news.
I'm looking at my watch. Like, how long is that?
Only half an hour. Did you watch the new Batman, the Batman trailer? Batman?
I did. It was good.
It was good, but was it though?
Well, it's different.
Was it though? Like, I can't, I don't know.
Would you have preferred the Adam West version?
I'm okay being done with this for a while, I think, is sort of what I realized. I was like, oh, look, it's another horrifyingly dark Batman story. And like, I remember going to see The Dark Knight. We took our parents after we saw it. We're like, oh, this was great. Let's go see it with mom and dad. And we took them.
Oh, yeah. I'll never forget that.
And I'm sure we told the story before. And they were horrified. They were like, I can't believe that that's what you need to watch to be entertained. They were like, they felt sorry for us. They were like,
they were stunned into silence and like ashen faced. They were like, I can't believe you found that entertaining. I was like,
it wasn't so much
like should I not have?
It wasn't so much that. I think they had a reaction to seeing The Dark Knight the way that I had a reaction to seeing Logan. So like when we did the Logan podcast, I was upset. I really like, I didn't dislike the movie. I recognized its competence and that it was essentially a good film, but I was just so bothered by the wanton violence involved with a character that just within the last year had made a cameo in like a much more lighthearted PG-13, you know, superhero romp. And now, you know, like within the first 10 minutes, he's dismembered like four Mexican guys. It's like, this is not what I was expecting. And it was so jarring that it just threw me off for the entire movie. And I think that's kind of where they were coming from. They knew they were getting a more serious Batman than Adam West, but you know, they were satisfied with the seriousness that Tim Burton brought to the project in 1989. So this was just on a different level. And I guess they could see the progression of these kind of films over time. And it goes from Adam West to, you know, Tim Burton and then to this. And they were like, whoa. And now we're like, you know, the pencil in the eyeball thing seems so tame compared to just the trailer for this movie.
I know. Yeah, the Riddler is some sort of mass murdering psychopath.
Yeah.
I didn't even realize that was who it was until about halfway through the trailer. I'm like, oh, it's supposed to be the Riddler. The guy with the question mark hat? He's duct taping people's faces.
Well, is
like, whoa.
Is he a Riddler or is he more of like a limerick artist? All of his it's all poems. It's little rhyming couplets. So it's not so much like a woohoo, Frank Gorshin. It's more like a little rhyming sing-songy thing.
Well, there was apparently, I mean, because people on the internet have a lot more time than I do. There was a riddle in the trailer, and somebody solved the riddle already. He was like a cryptographer for NASA or whatever. You know, like, and it
What's
was a clever
been up to lately. No,
I guess, yeah. Sitting in his pajamas, you know, like a Zoom call, you know, and he saw, and the riddle was clever, I guess, but like, it doesn't detract from the fact that the man is murdering people in cold blood and slitting their throats, you know.
Yeah,
I mean, the Riddler's tough to do. I know that the Batman animated series guys, you know, in the 90s, which I always reference because it's so wonderful, they only did like two episodes with the Riddler because they said like, it's hard. First of all, it's hard to write riddles. Like writing the riddles are hard.
Yeah.
And then they have to be interesting enough that the person solving them can't be too stupid. So like the riddles can't be too easy, but they can't be so impossible that the guy can't figure them out, you know?
Yeah.
Here's the thing with, as I've seen these opinions on Twitter and what have you, and I disagree with them. The movies and the TV shows now with all the cartoon superhero stuff are having the same problem that the comic books had, which is a bad sign for them. And I think Marvel's doing it well, although they're going the wrong way too. You got to switch it up and do something new, right? How many Batman issues can you have? So what they do is they start to change it. Now you have the Batman that's a psycho versus the Batman who just solved mysteries, to the point where you have so many different types of Batman comics that people don't know what they're supposed to be reading anymore. And you have everybody splintered off like, well, my Batman's this character and screw your Batman. You know, you split the fandom into a million pieces and you've oversaturated the market, basically coming up with different versions of everything. So like DC had this big Comic-Con weekend for themselves, just for DC shows. There's a Harley Quinn show, there's a Batman show, there's a Flash movie coming out, there's two different types of video games, and none of them make sense. They don't mesh together. They're in different quote universes or what have you. What am I supposed to watch? Which one is supposed to be the real one? I don't know. Whereas Marvel's like, this is our movie, this is the timeline, everything you need to watch is in this line of movies, and we're not going to have 8,000 spinoffs yet because it's confusing. And too much. You know, this pandemic has been good for Marvel movies because everyone's gotten a break after Endgame. You know, but we got way too many DC stuff. And I don't say that as like I'm mad about it. It's just there's too much to watch. I can't possibly watch it all.
Yeah. So you basically have two different companies in Marvel and DC trying to do the same thing, the exact same thing, differently. And the exact same thing is to sell as much of their product to as many people as possible. And Marvel has chosen to do that by making widely accessible films that fit within a single continuum or universe. You know, they're all a little bit different, but they're all accessible. Everybody can watch any Marvel movie. There's nothing that precludes a certain demographic from going, this is not for me. You know, you can kind of get into every one of them. And your interest in it will vary depending on who you are and what it is. But there's really nothing offensive about it that would turn off an entire segment completely. You know, the guy can still take his girlfriend to see this, and she'll be okay with it. And, you know, there's the dads and moms are okay with the films. There's something in there. They're not offensive at any point. DC is doing it differently, and they're looking at it much like, you know, a network will, or a service like Netflix will be like, rather than trying to do the old model of television, which was just to get as many eyeballs on TV as, you know, at one time, you make a million different things, and you got some. You have to have something for everybody. And so the Harley Quinn movie, people really like that one, but a small number of people do. And some people are really turned off by this kind of a Batman, and so they're not going to watch that, but somebody will. So, like, it isn't about getting everyone to go to your movie. It's about getting a lot of one group to go to this movie and a lot of a different group to go to that movie. And if you aggregate it all together, you've got a lot of eyeballs on your product and you can sell them stuff.
Yeah.
I think it's ultimately less effective in from a marketing standpoint than what Marvel is doing. I mean, some of that's demonstrable because they made so much money. But at the same time, it forces Marvel to make kind of watered down versions of their movies. Whereas, like, you know, this is a very clear vision for Batman that we saw in this trailer. I don't know if I like it. I kind of miss Batman being clever. You know, that's something I was like, you know what? Wasn't he supposed to be kind of smart, too? And, like, you kind of got that a little bit in the Christopher Nolan movies. But, like, for the most part, he was just brooding and sad and kind of dealing with it, like, as a character. And then Ben Affleck comes along, and he's just, like, lifting tires and getting massive.
Yeah.
And it was just about how do I beat Superman as Batman? Well, you don't, but, like, you... And now this guy's just vicious, it seems. And it's cool. It looks like the video games, which were fun. But, you know, I do miss the sort of the cleverness of Batman from, like, the old cartoon.
Well, I mean, the benefit to this blitzkrieg is that eventually you might actually see him again.
So. Yeah. Did you have any other thoughts on the trailer?
I mean, I don't know. It's one more thing. I mean, they're still doing the other stuff. They put another Wonder Woman trailer out, you know, which looks fine.
I saw the first one a while ago. It was more of a teaser. I actually didn't see this one. I didn't know that.
Yeah, this one's a little bit, it's a little meatier. You know, you see more of Kristen Wiig. She's the bad guy.
Kristen Wiig is the bad guy?
Yeah, which is different for her. She's usually like the weirdo.
Yeah. You know what her best role was? In The Martian.
Oh, I never saw that still.
It's a good movie. She plays like the NASA public relations lady, and it's like this kind of bland part, but she's kind of a engaging person to watch, and so when she's up there, she's like funny. It's like an oddly quirky role that she plays into like a relatively boring bureaucratic position. I was like,
she's very quirky, but I guess not in this movie.
Yeah,
I don't understand how, you know, Chris Pine is in it, and I know he'll come back through mumbo jumbo magic or whatever, but they don't address that in the trailers. He's just there. So I'm like, didn't he blow up in an airplane last time?
Yeah.
I mean, I saw the movie a while ago. I know he died.
Not only did he die, but his death, the death of the character was probably what made the movie good, because it really, you know, it raised the stakes for a lot of it, for the character, tremendously. Like, you know, it was a fun movie. It was a good fish out of water story, and she's extremely hot, and so that's nice too. But, you know, Chris Pine is a great actor. He's really, you know, he was a lot of fun in the film, and they really developed a relationship, the two of them. And then they kill him off. And that's a kind of mature thing to do in a, you know, when you're making a World War One movie, basically. And it gave the film some gravitas, and it gave the character some sort of like emotional anchor. And I was kind of bummed out when I just saw, like, and the problem is there's nowhere to go from there. Like, she could go on and have more adventures.
Yeah, what's he going to die again?
But, like, yeah, it's just, how does he come back? And, you know, and I don't know what adventures he has with, like, it made sense to do, like, an intro movie for her and then have her be in the Justice League, and she can carry that sort of pain of death with her into the, you know, as part of an ensemble. It's hard to make another movie where you bring up how sad she is again. But it does, it did, I don't know, I thought it was a good move. And so when I saw he was back, I was like, oh, all right. So it's like a soap opera thing. This guy dies and then, oh no, it's his evil twin brother, Larry.
I mean, he was still dead in the Justice League. Like, that was
right,
a thing.
Exactly.
Like, yeah, he's not around anymore. So I was like, would he die again? He set sail for parts unknown? I don't know.
Yeah, she's still carrying a torch for him. That's like the whole thing. Is she's, you know, it accomplishes lots of things. It gives her some real-world experience with death, which she didn't have before. And it also makes her romantically unavailable to the other guys in the Justice League. So there's not like a chance that, you know, that her and Superman are going to get it on.
Yeah.
Like, this just, it kind of puts her above the rest of them in a way. Mm-hmm. In terms of like the sexual tension, it just wasn't there, because you don't need that in that kind of a movie. But yeah, no, it's just, all right, we'll bring him back. Old Blue Eyes.
Yeah. Captain Handsome. All right. So anything else?
Anything else drop? Any other trailers?
Yeah.
I'm avoiding the Bond ones just in case there's a chance I could see it at any point soon. I think Mulan comes out September 3rd. We can take a look at that one.
But, yeah. Otherwise, it's slim pickings, sadly. And summer's almost over.
Yeah. So, yeah, maybe soon. We'll see.
Well, hopefully.
Yeah. Dig up some old Bond movies or some Better Late Than Nevers.
We'll have stuff. It's just stuff that's new.
Yeah. All right. Well, if you guys have any thoughts about Greyhound that you think we didn't cover, you should definitely find us on the social medias. We are at Three Drinks in Pod on Instagram and Twitter. You can find us on Facebook. And if you want to email us, you can do so at threedrinksinpodcast@gmail.com. We are available on all streaming services, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. Subscribe, tell friends, leave reviews, and that's it.
Yeah. Cool.
All right. As always, please drink. Can't do it because I'm tired. I'm late. It's tired and I'm late. There you go.
Well, you should drink responsibly.
If you made it this far into the podcast, good for you. And as always, please drink responsibly, and we'll talk to you all next time.
Good night.
Indeed.